You are listening to.
Listening to.
You are listening to.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
Black is.
BlackIsOnline.com.
Break!
What's going on, world? Welcome back to another edition of the Black Is Break. We have an amazing roundtable this weekend, and we're hoping that you will enjoy it. First, this is Brother Malcolm opening up. We've got the head Negress in charge, KC Layman. We got Brother Chris Layman. We've got Shelby, Leisha, Tash. Somewhere in the building, there's a Steve and Julius. And the topic for tonight, and the topic, and my fiance, but she gonna lay low. She gonna speak in my ear, and I'll say her piece. The topic for tonight is: what is the state of the Black voting bloc in the USA? And we're gonna open up with Leisha, who brought us this amazing article, video interview with Michelle Alexander on MSNBC. So. What are your thoughts, Leisha, about this really dynamic interview that she had with Chris Hayes? I think we were just discussing that. We're not even sure how much of that was made the actual broadcast because it was so, not only was it dynamic, but I mean, there was so much truth being told. And we know in cable news, there is a I was going to say, not a dearth, but what's the opposite of dearth?
A lack.
A lack, for lack of a better word, a lack of that truth. What are your thoughts about why Michelle Alexander, basically to give everybody a quick synopsis, Michelle Alexander came on the show to discuss about this idea of why Black people should not be voting for Hillary Clinton and sort of our miseducation about the Clinton legacy.
Well, I think why the interview stood out to me was just because I don't hear as much touching upon sort of these the emotional reasons why Black people love the Clintons. I hear a lot more like, oh, because Hillary's more electable and there's like this fear of a Republican winning. And I just know that for me personally, it resonated because my relationship, I mean, in my mind with the Clintons is a very emotional one in the sense that I always tell this anecdote about being, I believe, in middle school, and Bill Clinton appeared on an MTV, like, town hall, and I was telling you about this, I think, and he was asked the question, who do you believe, Anita Hill or Clarence Thomas? And he answered very directly, and he said, I believe Anita Hill. And I remember watching and, like, literally getting, like, goosebumps because I had never heard a politician, like, not only just, like, answer a question directly, but also agree with me and relate to like sort of how I felt. And this is like, you know, I was like either in middle school or high school. And that always stood out to me. And Bill Clinton's the first president I voted for. And I was thrilled when he won. And I remember reading Michael Moore's book, Stupid White Men. And one of the first chapters was about how Bill Clinton was one of the greatest Republican presidents we've ever had. And I remember feeling very upset at reading that because it really shattered my view of him. And I think that that's kind of what people are going through now. And I think that she articulated that in a very, in a way that I don't hear often on the news. And I think what a huge factor for some people in why they can't get over supporting Hillary, regardless of certain facts that are laid out to them. And emotions sometimes trump logic for a lot of people. It doesn't for me, which is why I was devastated.
Most
but
of the, most of the voting bloc is moved by emotion.
Yeah. So.
And the one part of the video that stood out to me was when she said that
Bill Clinton was the first person, or maybe Bill and Hillary together were the first people to treat black people like people as far as a president. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons why we had Toni Morrison calling him like the first black president. He actually acknowledged our existence in our culture in some ways. And right now, that up against Bernie Sanders, who is virtually unknown to so many people. Not to mention, I think what Bernie Sanders is suffering from a lot is ageism. The block that's just like our parents' generation. Some of our parents, age-wise, will be very close to Bernie Sanders. Some of them are younger than him. And I think for them, that's an issue. They're looking at their experience, thinking about their mortality, and they're just like, nah, he doesn't have enough time or juice left in him for the job.
Especially coming from Obama, who's so young and like, it just feels like a step back, I think, for some people, despite that he's way far ahead of most everyone. But
one of the things that I've loved, I went back and read the article that she wrote for The Nation. And one of the things that I like that she articulated in the article was that it's completely fair to connect Hillary Clinton to Bill Clinton's administration, because she revolutionized what it meant to be the first lady. While many first ladies were very heavy-handed in policy and all that beforehand, they couldn't do it in the public eye, right? It was very much behind closed doors that they were able to give their opinion. It's not like they could be so vocal. And remember, Hillary was criticized for having such an opinion about what her husband was doing, how it was going to get done. And so these were just as much her policies as they were his policies. And they kind of presented it to us as a united front. So now that she's running, it becomes more fair to hold her accountable for some of the things that were done and completely responsible for the things that she said.
She really is like the Claire Underwood to his Frank Underwood. And I think the reason why it is fair to hold her accountable is I actually think it's a compliment, because it says that you were just as much a part of his strategy, his policy, as anyone in his cabinet. And so I think it's a plus, because you can say, look, here this woman was a part of the administration that turned our economy around in the 90s and took us out of, you know, that recession, and brought us in our lifetime the first surplus. Thank you. In our lifetime, and here now we're seeing another transformation of the economy with President Obama. I think what's interesting to note, though, when it comes to, I can personally say I'm registered independent. And part of that reason is because it's hard for me to literally say that one particular party knows all of me, right? Because I look at the Republicans, the Democrats, Green Party, Libertarians, and all of them may have certain parts that I may be interested in, but they don't all speak to me. So I feel like as an independent, you have the ability to sort of make that choice for who you feel will best represent you. But the thing about the Hillary-Bernie moment, a few things. One, Bernie Sanders, for me, it's interesting because while his platform is energizing and revolutionary, his image represents the past. He's an older white man. And so I think there's a challenge that he has there with overcoming that, which is so interesting because we had mentioned before we started recording that if he puts Michelle Alexander on his ticket, he'll probably win, because he really desperately needs that contrast. He needs like a Latino woman or a black, like it's so, because there is such a movement in this country with diversity and inclusion, and it's not to kick all the straight white men out of the conversation, but it's a strong movement about inclusion and diversity and other voices. And his very presence sort of negates that. Secondly, I think the challenge with any political presidential race is that people just aren't well-read and aware of many things. So this is what's fascinating about social media in this day and age versus the time that the Clintons ran the first time. You didn't really have the access to all of the article. I mean, now on Facebook, it's like all the Bernie and Hillary supporters on my timeline. It's like every day there's like, did you find this about her? Did you find this about him? And there's all these like gotcha articles about each of the candidates that back in the day you wouldn't have had that. It was like they were on the stump. They came to your city. They came to your town. And you were mesmerized and caught up in their oratorical skills and their genuine interest in the Black community, their genuine interest by coming to our churches and our schools. And that means something to people, right? But those who are a little bit more politically savvy understand that it's so much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. That's why I feel all those people who've come for President Obama in any way have not read any of his books. Because if you read The Audacity of Hope, this man is the exact same person he is in The Audacity of Hope, a book he wrote before he even became president. But what happens is because we're uninformed, we only get caught up in sound bites on the television, radio, commercial, political ads, and what our leaders tell us or who they support. And it sort of makes us in some ways like a misinformed voting bloc. And I'm not saying it's just us. I think we're seeing that in the whole country. But I think that's part of the challenge that the Black community is dealing with right now.
You know, one of the things that actually scares me, and I'm using the word scare on purpose, is if you think about the things that Bernie Sanders wants to do, nothing really wrong with what he wants to do. A lot of the things he wants to do are great. Except for the cost of it. Except for the, A, well, yes. Yes, at the cost. But the reality of the situation is I don't, and I mean this from my whole heart, and I didn't I knew when President Obama got elected that the people who were screaming, yes, we can, were going to eventually go back to complaining. And they did. A lot of people get caught up in the campaign and the hype and all the energy of the actual election. And then when it comes time to really go through the shit, like when it really is expensive to get this stuff done, when you really have to deal with big breaking big business. I mean, think about all, I mean, if you really think about all the things that he's saying, of course they make sense. Even the idea of creating a third party, all of that sounds great, but are we willing to go through the pain to get there? And I really feel like Americans are lazy in a lot of ways, and they want someone else to fix it. And
I think there's a wave in this country now, and people are willing to go through the pain to get there. The fact that 30% of Bernie Sanders supporters are reported that if he doesn't win the nomination, that they'll vote for Trump, and they'll vote for Trump under the auspices of that they feel as if Trump will be so ineffective that there will be a revolution and a political uproar. There's just an overwhelming wave that's happening that we're watching. And to get back to Alicia Malcolm's point on the emotionality, or Michelle Alexander's point about the emotionality with which we vote, I have a personal story from this in my family. There's a family member of mine who is a die-hard Hillary Clinton fan. And me and her, this is an elder of mine, an aunt, and me and her, we were both huge Hillary Clinton fans. Like in 2000, I was like, why is she running for the Senate? She needs to run for president. She's ready now. She's commanding. And like, I just really saw what it was about Hillary Clinton that is a leader. My aunt, who's Black, was vehemently opposed to Barack Obama. And he might have even expressed, and I might be paraphrasing at this time, like, Black people are so disloyal, you know, like they don't understand what the Clintons have done for us. And, you know, Barack Obama, who has little to no experience, where Hillary Clinton has had this job as a senator. She's been basically Bill Clinton's number one policy advisor, you know, in the White House. And she's done this and that. And, you know, she was genuinely personally hurt that she was looking around and she saw her people voting for Barack Obama in 2008 over Hillary Clinton. She clearly got over it because she had no choice. But, that taught me a really valuable lesson. And to that extent, you know, there's a part of me that really, I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I'll just put it out there, like, you know, proudly. And everything that anybody just expressed at this table that offers any type of doubt about what he represents or what he can do or how expensive it is, I was ready to, like, jump in and, like you know, tackle their point. But I want to say I don't tend to let people on my social media page talk about Hillary Clinton. Because there's a part of there's an emotional feeling connection I have to her. I'm not ever sure when someone talks about her, and I guess being mid-30s, I don't know where that voting block would make me, but I'm not sure when they're talking about her that there's not an edge of sexism, like you mentioned, Shelby, when it was like, why is she a first lady talking about policy? You know, she needs to be demure and behind the scenes. If I'm not sure that you're not a sexist, or that you just have an issue. She's had it really hard. Mm-hmm. They never gave her, when I say they, the opposition and the media, never really gave her a fair shot. Mm-hmm. I do understand that she's a wily politician, too. So she does put herself in jams that are legitimately able to, that she, you know, that she legitimately encouraged. But for me, this story about Hillary Clinton, as a feminist, I feel as if the story of Hillary Clinton is almost, it's Shakespearean for me. Like, this is a woman who was capable when she graduated from Wellesley. People, when she gave the valedictorian speech, the room, the palpable feeling in the room was, oh my God, we're watching our first female president speak. She went to law school, met an equally charming, maybe more charming individual, and put all of her energy in making sure that he became governor and president first when she could have done it for herself. And she mastered the game. And like now, the game that she's mastered, the people have no interest in someone who can master that. That makes you a part of the problem.
Right.
The fact that you can vacillate on the point, you can pivot quickly, you can, you know, show real affection for and real interest in Black people's humanity, but then execute policy that decimates the Black community because it's all in the interest of brokering a power brokering. And so, you know, like, I Hillary's person and someone was like, yeah, I see you, you know, like I respect where you've come. But you know, all the stuff that you've mastered up until now, because you thought it was going to have you to arrive to this point. Like, I'm sorry, babe, but this is not it. And that doesn't mean she doesn't have a place in our history and she can't
be important. No, she just missed her window.
She still might get the Democratic nomination.
That is also true.
But I would particularly love if this swell that I am, that I'm a part of, there's like, we need to, there needs to be a little revolutionary break the system. People keep asking me, well, what is Bernie Sanders going to do the first 4 years? Blah, blah, blah. The best thing about Bernie Sanders is that he is someone who is not afraid to use the bully pulpit as a broken record to go on and on and talking about the issues. Those first 4 years he's in office, he might get nothing done, but he will continually move us toward understanding that we are all socialists in this country. And it's a word that people, you know, even on Fox News, they still use the term about us being socialists as if somehow this is not what we're participating in. If public schools, socialism, fire departments, police departments, socialism. I mean, up until the 1920s, only rich people had fire departments. We paid taxes to get a certain amount of services. Mm-hmm. And we've been paying taxes and not getting the maximum amount of services or healthcare or education that all of the rest of the development world have been getting at the same, at a lower rate. And the wool has been pulled over our eyes, and he's willing to call us out and he's been true to his, he's been true to his mission from jump. And like, this is a principled
really
person.
About him as a candidate is the consistency
right.
of his narrative, which to me for my money is way more important these days.
Exactly.
Like your word. We tell our children, we tell our boys, our girls, your word is your bond. And then we have an opportunity to put someone in a position of power and wield that power. And then we don't even, we get caught up in emotionality of their stump speech or whatnot. I think one of the things that I'm not naive about is that politics is about strategy, and that unless this whole thing is being dismantled, there's one thing that you have to give it to President Obama. People were very critical of him in the first 4 years. Why didn't you deal with black people and education and all these things? Because he was trying to get another 4 years. Now, as you can see, he's doing whatever he wants. I mean, he went to Cuba and was like, I don't care what you say. But I think, I don't mean to be so dramatic, but it just seems to me in this country, if anything has drastically changed for that have long lasting change, it came with violence and death. And I don't, that's my concern, is that where we're headed right now
mm-hmm.
is towards a lot of violence and death, exactly. particularly some possibly some civil war. I don't do that. But there is, I believe that we may be headed toward something like when I look at the vitriol and mm-hmm. the uncivility of the Trump side
mm-hmm.
Supporters, and then I look at what that evil mixed with people who were against it put together in one room in Chicago, it was frightening, because basically everything that you were against, you became.
Well, it's like the JFK quote, I believe, which is like, if you make peaceful revolution impossible, you make violent revolution inevitable. I'm totally paraphrasing because mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what mm-hmm. it is. But I mean, it does feel like that's where we're like hurtling towards, and especially with the talk of the Republicans trying to maneuver this way of stealing Trump. It's very much like stifling a revolution on their side. Agreed to allow
firearms at the convention.
They didn't agree. They said no.
Oh, they did say no.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
that was actually a sort of like a troll who started that, believe it or not. I mean, a liberal troll, just to kind of mess with them. And then all these conservatives signed the petition. It's hilarious. But
oh, that's brilliant.
And forced them to actually address, like, hey, you guys want guns at the convention? Of course, they're like, no. But because they're hypocrites. But yeah, I think that there is that feeling, sort of. Mm. I mean, I don't feel it as much on the Bernie side, but there is absolutely anger, I think justifiable anger, at the feeling that he hasn't gotten a fair shake in the election, that the DNC has played a role in keeping him down. The media's played a role, and there is anger on that side as here, well. Here. Yeah.
But my thing is, and that anger is justified, but I do, like any revolution, anything that's happened, that group, that side is going to have to keep fighting, and you may have to do that without the help of the mainstream media, without... Like, literally...
Like what she's talking about.
Whatever you're deciding to do, whatever's going to happen. Because I personally believe, I voted for Ralph Nader. People may think I'm crazy. Why'd you vote Green Party? But I read the platforms. I'm like, I'm down for what you stand for. And people have this idea, but we need to vote for this particular candidate so that we can block the opposition. And my thing is, that's not democracy. You need to vote for who you believe will bring the country to where you personally believe it should go.
That brings up Michelle Alexander's point about the what she said, emotional blackmail.
Right.
Blackmail. Which, yeah. Remember, that's exactly the point phrase that she made. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a brilliant phrase. And the thing about it is, if you believe in what Bernie stands for, I highly hope that, you know, that those people will come out and stump and vote, and the numbers will be there. But I just don't believe in, like, I'm not going to vote for who I really believe in because I want the opposition to not win. That's just how it, that's how, if you believe in, you should get more people to help.
If the candidate that I want doesn't get the Democratic nomination and I have to make a practical choice between the lesser of two evils, I absolutely will make that choice. And, you know, and Susan Sarandon got smacked down last week for having said that, you know, she'll see when it comes to that time whether she'll vote for Hillary. And, you know, it was like all this false ire against her because, you know, how dare you? What if Trump gets the nomination? And, you know, the type of emotional blackmail, we got to you have to follow the party line just to save us from the wackos on the other side. But
I'm a person who's one of those people who's kind of like, I want him to get the nomination. I actually kind of want him to win.
Yeah.
I say that because I feel like I feel like we're at a crossroads in this country, and either people, we always talk about this in conversations about black community and whatnot, is that the stakes are never high enough. And so that's why people are so apathetic. I want the stakes to be so high that people are like, choose ye this day.
And this is something I'm really struggling with. I mean, my plan is to vote for Hillary Clinton if she gets the nomination, but that will be going against everything that you just said. Because clearly, if I was going to vote with what I believe, I would vote Green Party. Like, no doubt about it. But
well, I'm not with Green Party these days. Just FYI.
Oh, really? I would vote for Jill Stein, probably. But
what's up with Elizabeth Warren, though?
I struggle with that because I do think that a vote in 2000, like there's lives that literally are ended because George Bush won. Like, people are dead that maybe wouldn't be dead today had Al Gore won. And so that's...
That's not Al Gore's fault. That's the Supreme Court's fault.
No. But he dropped his case. But Al Gore took it. He could have let it go.
But it doesn't matter. If enough people voted for Al Gore, none of that would have even been an issue.
No, they did. He won the popular vote.
But I'm saying, if it had been enough that it wouldn't have even been a question, it wouldn't have even been a question, is my point. And I'm just saying that... I'm not arguing.
Yeah, no, I get your point.
Yeah, I mean, like, if he had clearly won, he would clearly have won.
I mean, I think the numbers show that he did clearly
yeah,
win.
Yeah, he stole.
This was a serious...
Well, he didn't, obviously, because, I mean, he won the popular vote. I hear you. But somehow the system worked in some way, whether it was rigging or what, that he was not the president. And I'm just saying that if you win, you win. Like, believe me, if they could have stolen it from Obama somehow, I'm sure they would have. Mm-hmm. But he won. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't do anything about it. I'm just saying Al Gore didn't do enough. Like, there's other things that have been pointed to. Like, he should have won his home state. You know what I mean?
I don't think
something like that would have made the
people
difference.
People have been jumping on Susan Sarandon about is this very point. It's like, if you don't vote for Hillary in a face-off between Trump and herself and Hillary, then essentially you could be handing the election to Trump. And he's crazy. He's a homophobe. He, you know, he wants to build a wall between along the entire border of Mexico and the United States. And what Susan Sarandon articulated, because she's been stumping or out on the field with Bernie, is a certain understanding that there's a certain part of our population that really does not have anything to lose. That they are willing to vote for Trump because they think he will usher in the revolution.
They are just like him. There was a brilliant article about how the reason why Trump is winning is because he doesn't feel political shame. That's what checks politicians.
I'm talking about poor people. No, I'm talking about people who don't agree with Trump, who are willing to vote him in because he will bring in a revolution quicker than Hillary being the candidate, an establishment candidate being the president. It's like, oh, we're going back to the status quo. Where big money runs everything. But they like the idea of, like, let's dismantle this system.
But my question to you now, let me bring this question to the table. What do we even think that would look like? Because let's say next year, this time, we're in the fourth month of a Trump presidency. Like, people say this revolution is, I mean, but what is, because to me, the far right wing has definitely shown how battered they are. I don't feel like I've seen how battered the left is, about how willing,
The revolution isn't going to be the left's attack against them.
No.
The revolution
saying,
is Trump saying something stupid, getting us into war, us being bankrupt, and, like, I think it's just Trump, fumbling in a major way. Is what'll bring a
maybe
But what I'm saying is, how is that the revolution? Like, are you saying?
I agree. Because
if somebody hits us with a nuclear bomb, we're done. So there's no revolution. We're dead. So what's the revolution that's going to happen from his presidency?
Personally, I think the Republicans still wouldn't let that happen. They still have a lot of power. I think.
Oh, they have plenty of power.
And when he gets in there, get it under control. Believe me, it would not be some.
And the thing about it is, just like everyone said about George W. Bush. The presidency, a lot of people feel like the presidency, that's
it would
not
be another Bush.
You're a puppet.
Yeah.
And like, they're literally everyone around you, between your cabinet, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all the branches of government, like, there's still checks and balances. Like, there's still some things you're not doing unless the Supreme Court and the Congress approve it, period. They're shutting you down. And so my question is, I'm just curious, like, what does this look like? And I hope we're not taking this off target, because this is really about the state of the black voting bloc. And Michael, so maybe even to fold that in, what do black people want revolutionized? Yes. Because I see us here, and I'm like, if there's anything that I feel should be at the forefront of our agenda, is the incarceration.
The criminal justice system.
The criminal justice. That should be at the forefront.
That's why Obama's Supreme Court pick is so frustrating.
Merrick Garland.
Yeah.
Well, because he's playing politics.
But it's so frustrating.
That should be at the forefront.
Dude, and he has the worst criminal justice judicial record
of all the things.
Everything. Yeah.
But that, to me, should be at the top of our list, given all the challenges that we're going through, given the statistics in the black community, given education, given all the. That's not happening.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Is Break. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you think. You can reach us on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, on Twitter at Black Is Online. You can hit us up via email at kc@blackisonline.com. Leave a message on the hotline, 323-455-4219. You can always check us out on our website, blackisonline.com. Thanks again.